We are doing the book of Shmuel, and the Philistines had gathered to war against Saul. And Saul couldn't get an answer from God. So he went to this woman who did the Ov, who could bring up from the dead. And we had left off where we described how the person who asks to bring back from the dead could hear, and the one who brings them up could see. And the woman, when she sees Shmuel, she yells out, and we described how Shmuel, when he was being brought up from the dead, was certain that it was a day of reckoning. So he brought a lot of other spirits with him. He said, if God's taking me to task, I want you guys with me. And we described how the woman yelled also because she saw Shmuel coming up head first. And the only time a spirit comes up head first is if the king is the one that requests to bring them up. Otherwise, they come up feet first. And Shaul tells her, don't worry. Tell me, what have you seen? And she tells him, I've seen all kinds of spirits coming up. And he asks her, describe him to me. And she says, I see an old man, and he's wrapped in a coat. And that is the way Shmuel always was. From the time he was a young man, his mother made him a special coat. And he'd always be in his special coat, which he was actually buried in. And when Shaul hears that he's wrapped in a special coat, Shaul knows it is Shmuel, and he bows. And Shmuel speaks to Shaul. Now only Shaul could hear. No one else could hear. So Shmuel tells Shaul, why have you shocked me? Why have you scared me and brought me up? And Shaul says, I'm in a terrible state. The Philistines are fighting me. God has left me. God hasn't answered me. Not through the prophets, not through dreams. And so I had no choice. I came to you. Tell me, what am I supposed to do now? There's war tomorrow. And Shmuel says, why do you ask me? God has left you. God is now helping the man who is your nemesis. And God did what he promised you. He tore the throne from you and gave it to your friend, to David. Throughout Shmuel's life, he never spoke to Shaul face to face and told him, David's going to be king. But now that he's dead, what can Shaul do to him? So Shmuel tells him, you didn't listen to God. God sent you to wipe out Amalek. You didn't. You left behind some people. That's what's happening to you today. And so Hashem is going to give you and the Jewish people in the hands of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your children are with me. And God will also give the camp of Israel into the hands of the Philistines. It's not what Shaul wanted to hear. And our sages decipher this conversation differently than we read it on the surface. Our sages say that when Shaul told Shmuel, God isn't answering me, Shaul left out one option. Shaul left out the option of the Kohanim. He did not say, I'm not getting an answer through the priests, through the Kohanim. And the reason was because he was embarrassed, because he himself had the Kohanim killed. And our sages say that when a person is embarrassed by what he has done, that's a big step in the tshuva process. The fact that a person can look back at something and be embarrassed about it. Half the time we're like, that was fun. You know? So it's a big step to be able to actually be embarrassed, to really be embarrassed. You know, we might be embarrassed if it's told in front of someone, but are we really embarrassed? Shaul was really embarrassed. And their sages say that when Shmuel told him, tomorrow you and your sons are with me, he was telling him, you're with me in the Garden of Eden. So Shaul just got good tidings. And our sages say that there was a much longer conversation going on here. Shmuel told Shaul, you have a choice. You go to war with your children, so you and your children will die, and the camp of Israel will flee, but they'll make it out, everything will be okay. You run from the war, you will live. I can't guarantee you you're getting the Garden of Eden, and I can't guarantee you what's going to be with the camp of Israel. And the next morning, Shaul is going to take his children and go to war. And the Medrash here says, the way of the world is that when someone has when someone has a party, he doesn't like walking into the party with all of his children together. He doesn't want people to look and say, look, what a gorgeous family. And when they say that, then it's like they're saying to God, why don't I have such a nice family? That's what we call ayin hara. So then the way people work is they don't like bringing their whole family to events in a way that everyone sees the family. Something to think about. We see in Chazal's time, they didn't walk down the aisle for the chazan and kala, right? And the angels in heaven came to God and said, what a fine person Shaul is. That's an exemplary human being. Everyone else is hiding their kids because they're worried of the evil eye. And you told him that if he goes to war with his kids tomorrow, it will be a service to the Jewish people. They will all die, him and his kids. But they will get the Garden of Eden. And he's going. And so the angels started shaking the heavens with claims. You can't let him die. You can't let his kids die. Look at what a pious person he is. In spite of everything, look at how he's standing up to the test. And our sages say that in the end of Parshas Kedoshim, what we read 3 weeks ago, the Torah says, don't bring up a spirit from the dead. Don't ask the dead. And directly after that begins the Parsha of Emor. Go tell the Kohanim their mitzvot. And our sages say that the juxtaposition is the conversation with the angels. This juncture. That God said to the angels, I know it says in my Torah, don't bring back the dead at the end of Kedoshim. I'm willing to forgo that. You're right, he's a pious person, I'll forgo that. But the next parsha begins with Emor el Kohanim, go tell the Kohanim. And that God said in heaven, he had the whole city of Nov murdered. I'm willing to forgo his history. I'm willing to forgo the other sins. I'm not willing to forgo. Go talk to the Kohanim. Go talk to the families whose blood he spilled. The Kohanim who he sent, he tried to send Avner and Amosa, and then he sent Doeg and executed those families. That I can't forgo. And that's why ultimately that's what's going to happen. Shaul bows and he's scared stiff. We can understand that. He'd been fasting all day. And the woman sees that he's faint and she says, listen to your mate. I've listened to you. I've risked my life to help you out. I did what you said. Now you listen to me. Listen to your mate. I'm giving you bread. You have to eat. You'll have strength to go. And he refused. And his servants begged him and she begged him and finally he listened to them. And he got up and he sat on the bed and she slaughtered a calf for him and she baked some matzahs for him. And they ate, and that night they slipped off to go back to the war front. It's war. And you remember David had joined the Philistine side. So now the nobles of the Philistines turn to Achish, the king of Gath, and they say, whoa, what's going on here? How come there are Jews, how come there are Hebrews in our camp? And Achish tells them, don't you know that's David? He's been with me for such a long time and I've never found him short of anything. He's perfect. And they all got upset and they said, send him back. Leave him in his post. He's not coming to war with us. Because the best way he could make up with his boss is by turning on us in the middle of war. If he wants to make up with his boss, this is the way. So this is David, don't you know? David's killed tens of thousands of Philistines. So Achish calls David and he tells him, look, I swear by God that in my eyes you're good. And I would have taken you as my chief of staff. I would have taken you up here as my chief guard. But the nobles here, they don't want you here. So go in peace and don't do what's bad in the eyes of the Philistine nobles. And David says, what have I ever done wrong to you from the first day I came here? Why won't I come and help you fight your enemies? And Achish says, I know that you're good. You're like an angel of God to me. But the Philistine the nobles, they said you shouldn't come to war. So get up early in the morning, take all the servants with you. And now David got what he wanted. Meaning initially he said, you leave. And David doesn't want to leave his men behind fighting the Jews. So David pushes. And then Achish says, okay, take everyone with you. Go. And go early in the morning. David gets up early. They go back to Philistine territory. And the Philistines go to war. David comes back to camp to a place called Ziklag, where he had left his families, and while he had gone out to war with the Philistines, Amalek had snuck up from behind and had captured everything he owned. He comes back to the camp and he finds that they burnt the whole city. The whole city is burnt down, the whole city of Ziklag, and they don't find anyone dead, but they don't find anyone. All their wives and children, everyone's gone. David and his men come back to the city. No wives, no kids, no city. And they start weeping. And the pasuk says they wept so long that they wept to the point where they had no strength left to weep. David's own two wives were in captivity. And the nation was upset after having lost their wives and children. They were upset at David. And they started talking, let's kill David. It's his fault. So David's own men are muttering against him. And the pasuk here says a line which I've always tried to adopt as my motto in life. I can't say I've lived up to it. It's a lifetime's work to live up to what David says in this pasuk. The pasuk says he's lost his wives, he's lost his children, he's lost his men's wives and children, and now his men are talking about stoning him. And the pasuk says, "Vayitchazek David b'Hashem Elokav." David took strength in Hashem, his God, in spite of everything. And I think that's the motto. That's David's motto. Regardless what happens, David is back to his tefillot. He's connected to Hashem in the worst of times. I think it's something to learn from David. You know, it's something to aspire to. Usually, what happens when things go tough is we try to think, how do I get out of this, and why did God do this to me? We blame God for what happened, but we don't view in God the solution. We say, okay, God's upset at me, and I don't know why, so let me see how I can make this work in spite of that. When the attitude has to be the exact opposite. So something bad happened, God gave me a test, now let me turn to God and see how God could help me get out of this. That's David. So David goes to the Kohen, and he says, ask God, through the ephod, ask God, what we're supposed to do. And he asks God, should I chase after the Philistines and will I catch them? Ordinarily you don't ask two questions at a time of God, but this was an emergency. So God answered two questions and said, chase and you will catch up to them. David never asked, will I be successful? That didn't interest him. David just asked, will I catch up to them? Remember what we discussed earlier tonight. Sometimes the goal is to fight the war. The goal isn't always to win. And God gives him, so to speak, a prize. God says, and you will win. You will save your families. David goes with the 600 men, and they come to the valley of Besor. And 200 men are tired. They've been running. David is left with 400 men. 200 men stay on the other side of the river. They come across an Egyptian man and they bring him to David and they give him bread and he eats. They give him to drink and he drinks. And they give him a fig and they give him some dry fruits and he eats. And suddenly he's a new man. He hadn't eaten or drank in 3 days and three nights. He was on the verge of dying, this Egyptian man. After they fed him and given him what he needed, so David asks him, tell me, who do you belong to? Where are you from? And he says, I'm an Egyptian. I'm a slave for an Amaleki man. And because I was sick, the man left me to starve to death by the roadside. We get a picture of what Amalek is like. And he tells...
Hasn't Amalek almost worked out at this point?
Oh, good question. You see, they're still around. It's a good point, right?
Right?
So our sages say that when he let some of the animals escape, some of the Amaleki knew how to make themselves into animals using their whatever they knew, and they were able to get out of there. Saul had, the pasuk says, he didn't finish the job, and we see that they're still here. They're still going to be here in Esther's time, and they'll threaten the annihilation of the Jewish people. They're here. He says, you know, we spread out over Judean territory, and we conquered Tziklag. And David tells him, will you take me down and show me where they're camped? And the man says, promise me you won't kill me and you won't give me over to my master, and I'll take you down. Look at the way our soldiers treated a man they found on the verge of death on the road. They gave him bread, they gave him water, they gave him figs, they gave him what he needed. And the man saw this treatment, and you know, when David needed to, we will learn in the future weeks, he tortured his enemies, didn't bother him. When the enemies showed they were a threat, so he had to show them that it's not worth it to threaten the people of Israel, so he tortured them. And we'll see that when we get there. Here, where it wasn't necessary, you see David treats him so humanely that he's making conditions with David. You know, I'll help you on the condition that. David has 400 men surrounding this Egyptian. You know, he could do whatever he wants to the man, but the man feels confident that he can make conditions with David, and David's okay with it. So he takes them down, and they're all eating and drinking and partying with all the loot that they took from the Philistine territory and the land of Judea. And David and his men, from dawn to dusk, they wipe out all the Philistines that are there partying. No one's left. The only people left are 400 men that were able to make it onto their camels and run away. And they took back everything that they captured. They hadn't killed the person. They weren't missing a son or a daughter or a wife or anything. Everything was brought back. And together with that, they got a lot of loot from the Amalek. They took it all back, all the cattle and everything, and they take it back. And the people never thought they'd succeed. It was only because of David. So they all said, this belongs to David. They come back to the 200 men who couldn't make it across the river, who were too tired. And David greets them with peace, and some people started saying they didn't join the war. They don't get anything but their wives and kids. Let them take them and go. And David says, no, it's not the way it works. Hashem gave us this, and we divide. Who could divide things like that? And that's a law that David made from that day onward, that they divide things fairly at a time of war, and even people who stayed at the home front, they also get a divide from the loot. He sends some of the loot to the people of Judea, and throughout the territories he sends loot. But the Philistines, while all this is taking place, David is protecting his whole family at the home front. Israel is fighting the Philistines. There's a big war going on. The Philistines win the war. Israel runs away. And on Mount Gilboa, the Philistines catch up to Saul and his sons. And the Philistines kill Saul's son, Jehonathan, David's best friend, Avinadav, Malkishua, and finally the archers locate Shaul. Now you have to understand that Shaul, his strength, the strength of the tribe of Benjamin, was the capacity to shoot bows and arrows. The prophet described in the book of Shoftim that when there was civil war, the tribe of Benjamin had 1,000 men, marksmen, who could hit a hare at a huge distance. From a huge distance, they could throw a slingshot and hit a hare. That's how good they were as marksmen. And now, his own weapons are being used against him. So Shaul sees it's going to be over. He turns to his lad and tells him, instead of my being tortured to death by them, I see I'm going to die. Take my sword and kill me. Don't let me be tortured to death. The lad is not willing to kill his master. He's not willing to kill the king of Israel. And so Shaul takes his own sword and he slices his throat. He falls on his own sword. And Shaul's dead. The lad sees it's over, so he too falls on his sword. Shaul, his three sons, his weapons carrier and his men, they all die together on that day. And the people of Israel see that Shaul's dead and that Israel has fled, and so the cities start receding. Whole cities are on the run. And the Philistines come in and settle down in those cities. The next morning, the Philistines come to strip the bodies, and they find Shaul and his three sons. And they cut off his head, they take off his clothing, and they start sending it around Philistine territory to show people how they conquered Saul. And they hung his body without a head on the fortification of Beit Shan. The people of Yavesh Gilad, if you recall, they were the first people who were attacked. The people of Yavesh Gilad, let's review history. They had a pact with the tribe of Benjamin. When there was civil war, they were the one territory who did not join to fight Benjamin. All the other tribes joined against Benjamin. Yavesh Gilad did not. And then when they did not, so the people of Israel went and destroyed the people of Yavesh Gilad. Because they said, if you're not joining the war against Benjamin, you're condoning their immoral activities. Then when Shaul became king, so the people of Yavesh Gilad were under attack by Ammon, and no one was going to come and help them. Whoever was left in Yavesh Gilad, no one was coming to help. So Shaul gathered the people of Israel, and that was his first great military campaign, saving the people of Yavesh Gilad from the Ammonites. So now that Shaul is dead, and his body is he was mutilated, and now it's being derided by the Philistines. So the people of Yavesh Gilad get together, and that night they go into Philistine territory, and they take off his body, his children's bodies, and they take Shaul and they give him a proper burial, and they fast 7 days over the loss of their king. And that brings us to the conclusion of what the Christians call Shmuel Aleph. You know, we don't have such a divide. By us, Shmuel is all one big book. But the Christians divided it into Shmuel A and Shmuel B. So the printers, for some reason, go in line with that. And we continue.
Is there a reason for that? Is there a divide? Is there a changing storyline? Yeah.
Well, Shaul's dead, and now David takes over.
Yeah.
But it's... But we don't have, you know, our tradition is it's all one book, the book of
right.
Shmuel. So Shaul has passed away, and David has finished the war with Amalek, and a man comes to him, and his clothing is torn, and he has earth on his head, and when he comes to David, he bows, and David asks him, "Where are you coming from?" And he says, "I just ran from the Israeli camp." And David says, "What happened? Tell me." And he says, "The nation fled. Many people were killed at war. Shaul and Yonasan died." David says to him, "How do you know Shaul and Yonasan died?" And the lad says, "I was there on the mountain of Gilboa, and I saw Shaul leaning on his spear, on his sword. And I saw that the archers had caught up to him, and the chariots were catching up to him. And he turned around to me and he called me. And I said, yeah. And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I said, 'I'm an Amaleki.'" Bad thing to tell David. David just had Amalek after his family. David just had war with Amalek. This man claims he's an Amaleki. And he says to me, "Do me a favor. I'm shivering to death. I'm on the verge of dying anyways. Just kill me. And I just have a little bit of life left." And I stood over him and I killed him because I knew that he wouldn't live after he threw himself on his sword. And I took his crown and he had some kind of bracelet, a royal bracelet, and I brought them to you, my master. I brought it here. Now this lad figures, we don't know if his story is true. We know he's come with a crown and a bracelet. But the commentaries differ in understanding whether he was just trying to find favor in King David's eyes, or whether he was really telling the truth. But the exact opposite happens. David tears his clothing, and everyone with him tears. And David throws a tremendous eulogy to arouse the people to weep over Saul. Don't forget, these are the same people who Shaul has been chasing for the last few years. So no one feels like crying over Shaul's death. So David leads a great eulogy, and they fast till nightfall over Shaul and Yonasan. And then David tells the lad, "Where are you from?" And he says, "I'm the son of an Amaleki Ger." And David asks him, "How come you weren't scared to kill a person anointed by God. And David calls one of his lads and tells him, kill this boy. And they kill him. And
so he let him stay overnight and then he killed him?
There's a time for everything. He said, you testified about yourself that you killed the Messiah of God. And then David laments a very famous lamentation about Shaul and Yonasan. He said, now we have to teach people how to fight war now that we don't have them. How could it be that such great warriors have fallen? Don't tell in Gat. Don't tell the Philistines, lest the Philistine girls rejoice over his falling. The mountains of Gilboa, if such tragedy happened by you, no rain or dew should fall upon you. That's the place where Saul, his shield was without oil. They used to put oil on their shields so the arrows would slip by. Now, our sages say that this line, don't tell the in Gat, don't tell the Philistine girls, is a message for all of us. That even if something embarrassing happens to us, we shouldn't post it on the internet. We shouldn't put it in the New York Times. We try to keep our dirty laundry inside.
So don't speak less and more about ourselves, please.
Right, right. Meaning, no one's saying that we're perfect. We all know that we have where to be more perfect. We have where to improve. But at the end of the day, al tagidu vegat. That's the line our sages use. Don't go telling the Philistine girls. Don't go spreading the word in Gat. Keep the dirty laundry inside. That's what David says. Don't make it known that Shaul has fallen, lest the Philistine girls rejoice over that. You, Yonasan, you never let your bow go idle, and Shaul's sword never came back empty. Shaul and Yonasan, and this line is a line that is often used on tombstones, how pleasant and loved in their lives, uvimotam lo nifradu, and they have not departed in their death. They were lighter than eagles and more brave than lions. Daughters of Israel weep over Saul because Saul would give dowry to any poor Jewish girl. He'd give her beautiful clothing to wear. I had a guy call me the other day. He said, I'm dating a girl, but her looks bother me. So I said, are you sure it's her looks and not her clothing or the way she does her hair or her glasses or her teeth? You know, the Talmud tells us that Shaul used to buy nice clothing for the girls when they got married because that can affect the way a girl looks. Maybe if she changes her clothing, she'll look nicer. The Talmud tells us, Rabbi Gamliel or Rabbi Yishmael once had a bride come before him weeping and she said, my chassan no longer wants to marry me. So he looked at her and he saw that she was missing a tooth. So he took out one of his own teeth, corresponding teeth, and he said, put this in. And she put it in, and he told his servants, help her, clean her up, get her some nicer clothing. And then he called the boy in, and he said, young man, you know, I have a kala for you, but I know you promised a different girl. But tell me what you think about this girl. And he brings her in before him, and she smiles, and now she has all the teeth in her grin. And he says, wow. That girl I'd marry. So then he started weeping. He said, look, the daughters of Israel, they are beautiful. It's the poverty that erodes their beauty. And he said, take it, my boy, because that's the prize you wanted all along. He didn't even recognize the same girl. So you see that looks aren't always just about looks. Sometimes they can be affected. So Chazal had an appreciation for that. Chazal were very with it. And Shaul, he had nothing better to do with his life than to fund the dowry for girls who couldn't afford it, to fund nice clothing for young kalas. The answer is, it's important. So it's not just an issue of it's a nice chesed. It is important, and that's what he did. So even though he was king of Israel, that was one of the things, and that's one of the things that David mentions in his eulogy. David ends and he says, I've loved you better than the love for women. How could it be that such brave warriors have fallen? And we are now beginning the period of King David's reign and his ascent to the throne, which is going to be in stages, as we will see. Bezrat Hashem, to be continued next week.